Exciting stuff back there for you. So settle in. All right. Well, today we get to wrap up our message series on the judges. And I don't know about you, I think it's been a good journey running into some folks here. And remember, our goal was to be able to look at these people, to see what they accomplish, and to learn from their life, to learn from their faith, and be able to take those principles that we can see in their life and in their faith and try to just put those into our everyday so that we can be judges. We can be incredible people for God. And so today we're going to end up with one last guy. And, you know, as we've done this, you know, there's been some of the judges you've probably been familiar with, maybe Deborah or Barak or you know, some of the bigger names like Gideon and Samson, you know. But there's been some of them that you probably didn't know before, like Jephthah. Remember him? That's where you say, oh, yeah, that was a great sermon, Pastor. I remember that every day. Jephthah. Yeah, I'm a Jephthah guy now. Yeah, right. Well, I got another one for you today. Another one for you today as we finish out. And part of the reason I share this guy with you is because he only gets one verse in the whole Bible. He's actually referred to two times in the whole Bible. There's only two verses where his name is mentioned in the whole Old Testament. And there's only one verse that describes what he did. And yet this guy finds his way into the Scriptures as an example for us. I share that with you because I know that as you come here, there are days you come here and you feel like you're pretty insignificant. There are days you hear messages from me and Scripture speaks and you hear it all and say, oh man, that's awesome, but how could I do that? See, I want you to understand, all you need is like one verse in your life. See, if when your life is done, if when it's all done, if you could look back from the heavenly realms and see that somebody just wrote down one awesome thing that you did for God, wouldn't that be worth it? Just one verse? That's all this guy gets. He gets just one verse, but it is incredible. And if you listen this morning, this may be the most powerful of all of the experiences of the judges that we hear this morning, all the ones we've done. Let me introduce you to a guy named Shamgar. Okay? Shamgar. He comes out of Judges 3, and here is his one verse. After Ehud, remember Ehud? Yeah, just did him. After Ehud came Shamgar, son of Anath, who struck down 600 Philistines with an ox goad. He too saved Israel. Now remember, we learned the cycle that Israel's been in, right? We learned the principle of what happens, right? So God raises up a judge and everything gets right and the people get back with God, but then time goes by and the judge dies and the people kind of fall away and distance is created between them and God. And of course, when distance gets between you and God, something else can move in, right? Well, the pattern continues. So the text is telling us Ehud died and the people, again, they were wandering away from following the principles of God, and so something else came in. In this case, it was the Philistines again. And God reaches out, and he touches the life of this guy named Shamgar. Now, what you have to understand is, for Shamgar, just like all the other judges, life was just unfolding. Life was just happening for Shamgar. You know, he got up every day and he did what he did. Life was just unfolding. If you look at the text, you'll learn that the first principle Shamgar can teach us is that you have to start where you are if you want to make a difference for God. If you want to get that one verse, if you want your life to mean something, if you want your life to really have an impact, you just have to decide today, learn from Shamgar, you're going to just start today. You're going to start right where you are. The text says this one verse, after Ehud came Shamgar, son of Anath. See, life is just unfolding for this guy. He gets up in the morning and you know, dad is there and he's got a family around him and he's got to get up and do a job. He goes out and hooks up the oxen for the day and he works in the fields and he lives with a bunch of other people in the town or the village nearby. He is just living his real world life, just like you are. He's just living. He's just doing what life is. Shamgar, the guy that was son of Anath, you probably maybe met him someday. Dad, you know his son, you know what I mean? He's just living. If you're going to stand up for God, if you're going to stand out for God, you need to decide you're going to start right where you are. Right where he was not a great place. Right where he was not a fantastic situation. The other verse that refers to Shamgar comes out of Judges 5. It says, in the days of Shamgar, son of Anath, same guy, right? In the days of Jael, the highways were abandoned. Travelers took a winding path. Villagers in Israel would not fight. They held back until Deborah arose. Shamgar's right before Deborah. What's going on in the experience of Shamgar's life? It's not good. The situation in Israel is not good. The Philistines are oppressing Israel, so much so that the people are living in fear. Why aren't they using the highways? Well, they're afraid. Why are they taking winding paths instead of just living straight? Oh, they're afraid. They got to take the back roads. See, they're oppressed, and this oppression is weighing upon them, and it's causing them to change the way they live. And the key thing, notice the text says the villagers in Israel would not fight. What's happening? They are removed so far from God that they are God's people in name only. They're not putting God into their lives. They're not standing up for God in their lives. They're every day they are settling. They are settling for the oppression of the Philistines. They're saying it's okay for us to just live our lives taking the back roads without having real direction and purpose. It's okay for us to just live in fear and anxiety and depression, frustration. It's okay. It's the way the world is. After all, the Philistines are in charge. They've backed away from their faith and they've backed away from their God. And there's only one thing that changes it in the text. Only one thing that changes it. Until I arose. You see that? It took one person to decide right where they were going to stand for God. Do you see that? It took just one person right where he is, right where life is, just to say, you know what? I am going to stand for God. I'm just going to start right here, right now, right today. I am just going to take God's principles, God's life that he desires for me. I'm going to take God into my life. I am just going to stand for God. And he did it right where he was. You see, you can't wait. You can't wait for life to somehow get all straightened out and then decide, well, now that it's good, I'm going to stand for God. You see, you can't wait until somehow your marriage gets a little better, or somehow your relationships out in the workplace get a little better, or somehow your kids all of a sudden become angels. You can't wait until you say, look, I'm going to just let God be in this experience. I'm going to stand for God in my marriage. I'm going to stand for God with my kids. I'm going to stand for God in my work. You see, you can't wait. You just got to start right where you are. Because the Philistines are always there ready to oppress you. The Philistines would love to have you live your life on the back roads. They'd love to have you live your life in fear and anxiety. They'd love to have you just stay away from God and not stand for him. And it took one person just to say, enough. I am going to stand right where I am, and I'm going to stand for God. I don't know about you, But I am absolutely convinced, and I think God is just speaking to us in this time and telling us it's time for us to do the same thing. I am absolutely tired of the Philistines taking over our schools, where our kids grow up in a culture of permissiveness, where sexuality and drugs and alcohol rule instead of God. I'm tired of that. I'm tired of culture telling us how we ought to live our lives and us buying into it like, well, that's just the way it is. I'm tired of the Philistines telling us, look, we're going to just oppress you and that's just the way it is. And we put up with it. It just takes one. And there's a whole lot more than one in the room today. It just takes one of us to say, look, we are going to take back our kids and we are going to take back our town and not let people live under the idol of materialism anymore. We are going to take back our families and we're going to take back, get this, we're going to take back our church and not let the culture tell the church what it ought to believe, but let the Bible tell us what we stand for. And it only takes one for us to say right where we are, today's the day we start. We're going to let God take over our town. We're going to let God take over our schools. We're going to let God take over our church. We are going to start right where we are. Even I arose. That's what Shamgar did. Shamgar just said, it's time. And he stood up. Next step. Once Shamgar did that, once he said, I've had it. I'm going to stand up for God right now, right where I am. The next thing he discovered is that God had already given him into his life. God had already given him everything he needed to accomplish what God wanted him to do. God had already put in Shamgar's life the tools that he needed to do a great thing for God. Okay, here's where it is in the verse. You ready? Talks about what Shamgar did. It said, Shamgar struck down 600 Philistines with an ox goad. And you say, a what? Right? A what? An ox goad? Yes. He struck down 600 Philistines with an ox goad. What's an ox goad? Well, let me tell you modern day how it works. Some of you may know I grew up on a hog farm in northern Illinois. And, you know, periodically we'd ship hogs to market. And, this big 16-wheeler would show up with a livestock trailer behind it, you know, and he'd back it all up. We'd have all the pigs all in a pen, and they had to go down this little chute. But ultimately, every single one of those hogs had to go through the door into the back end of this livestock trailer. And the door wasn't very big. They had to go through this little dark opening to get into the trailer. And inevitably, there would be, every so often, this pig that would come up the chute and he'd get right to that door and he would stop. Right? You see it happening, right? He would stop and say, I ain't moving another inch. Now the guy who owned the truck, who did the trailer, who did this every day, he had this thing. It was about that long and it was a silver tube, had a little handle on it. Silver tube, and on the end of it, there were two little prongs sticking out. And he'd go over to that hog that was just kind of standing there saying, I ain't moving. And he'd take that staff, that rod, and he'd just give him a like that, and boom, in the hog would go. He would take his cattle prod and encourage. Right? He would just offer a little extra encouragement. Now, animal activists, don't get upset this morning. I'm not promoting we run around with cattle prods, but, you know, that's what an ox goad was. That's what it was. An ox goad was that kind of thing. What did Shamgar do? He got up in the morning. He went to work. He took care of the oxen. And so every single day, he used an ox goad. It was a long stick. On the end of the stick was some sharp metal, a little pointy metal, and he would encourage the oxen. Plowing the field, the oxen would stop and say, I'm tired, I'm not moving. Shamgar would grab the ox goad and say, let me give you a little encouragement. And he'd encourage him. probably on the other end, there was probably some kind of chisel-like end to it where he would use that to scrape off the dirt off the plow. And if he was smart, he probably used it to scrape the mud off his boots, right? But that's what it was. He used it every single day. It was already there in his life. And it's that tool, that everyday tool, that he used to defeat 600 Philistines. You say, well, wait a minute. I mean, didn't the guy have like a lightsaber? I mean, you know, couldn't he be like Luke Skywalker, or, you know? No, he couldn't do that. You see, that was not possible for him to even go get a sword. The Philistines made sure that the Israelites could not produce weapons of mass destruction. It goes like this, 1 Samuel 13. Not a blacksmith could be found in the whole land of Israel, because the Philistines had said, otherwise the Hebrews will make swords or spears. So all Israel went down to the Philistines to have their plow points, matlocks, axes, and sickles sharpened. What's happening? The Philistines made sure the Hebrews had no weapons. All he had was an ox goad. And that's all he needed. See, everything he needed to defeat the Philistines, God had already put into his life. The ox goad. Need more proof? He's not the only one. How about Samson? Remember Samson, great judge? He comes a little further down the road. One day, Samson has a little conflict with some Philistines, about 1,000. He has some conflict with some Philistines. He's got no weapons on him at all, and he's going to fight this big fight. What do you suppose he grabs down and picks up that God had already put in his possession? Text says, finding a fresh jawbone of a donkey, he grabbed it and struck down 1,000 men. See, God provided him everything he needed to accomplish the task, didn't he? Oh, he's not the only one. What about David? David went to fight a Philistine, big guy named Goliath, pretty awesome dude. And he went to fight him with what? A slingshot and 5 stones. God gave him everything he needed. Moses, great leader of the people of Israel, who delivered them from the mighty Pharaoh. What did he do it with? A staff? A stick? It says in the text, Moses asked the Lord, suppose everyone refuses to listen to my message. No one believes that you're really appearing to me. The Lord answered, what is in your hand? Isn't that a great question? See, God looked at Moses and said, look, I've already given you everything you need to do this task, Moses. Just look what's in your hands. What's in your hands? A walking stick, Moses replied. Throw it down, the Lord commanded. So Moses threw the stick down the ground. Immediately it turned into a snake, and Moses jumped back. I would too. Pick it up by the tail, the Lord told him. And when Moses did this, the snake turned back into a walking stick. Do this, the Lord said. See, God gave Moses, and that stick didn't just become a snake once in a while. That's the same staff that Moses used when he was standing there and the Red Sea was in front of him. And he lifted up the staff, the text says, and the sea parted and the people of God walked through on dry ground. And that same stick is the stick he struck when they were out in the desert, a rock with, and water came out of the rock. Awesome stick. And God already had it in his hand before he even asked him to do the task. God will never ask you to do something that he hasn't already provided you what you need to do it. Need more evidence? How about Jesus? Heard of him? Thought you had. How about Jesus? One day he's on a mountainside. He's preaching to the people, and you know how preachers are. He ran a little long. Right? He ran a little long. And the disciples come up to him and they say, Lord, you ran a little long. Time's a ticking and the people are getting hungry. It's getting late in the day. We should send them away so they'll go get food. Here's what the text says. Let the crowds leave, the disciples told him, so they can go to the villages and buy some food. Jesus replied, they don't have to leave. Why don't you give them something to eat? What's he telling them? They don't have to go anywhere. You already have everything you need to accomplish the God task of feeding 5,000 and more people. It's already here. the disciples said, but they said, we only have 5 small loaves of bread and 2 fish. They already had it. And before the experience is done, the text tells us, 5,000, not including women and children, sorry gals, 5,000, not including women and children, were able to eat off what they already had. And when it was all done, they got the leftovers together and there was 12 baskets full. God will never ask you to do something He hasn't already put into your life what you need to accomplish it. See, in your marriage, you don't need to look for somebody else because God has already put your husband or your wife into your life. With your kids, you don't need to look at other kids and say, man, if my kids were only as good as they are. No, God has already put those kids in your life. And He's given you everything you need to have an incredible marriage. He's given you everything you need to have incredible children for Him. In your work, you don't need to look for another job. God's already given you what you need to be incredible in what you're doing. And if you're out of work, God has already given you what you need to do whatever it is He's going to open the door of opportunity for you to accomplish. He's already given it to you. You've got it. You just have to look around a little bit and grab it. Shamgar took the ox goat to accomplish this incredible task for God. Now here's the other thing. He's going to ask you to stand up right where you are. He's going to make sure you have everything you need to do it. But look out. He's going to ask you to do something big. Something big. God doesn't think small. God thinks big. God thinks big. Remember, when He created the universe. Big? Pretty big. Ever look at a mountain lately? Pretty big. God is a God who does big things. And when He comes to His people, He looks at us to do big things. Can you imagine that day when God came to Shamgar and touched him on the shoulder and said, Shamgar, come on, we got a little job to do. We're going to go out and we're going to strike down 600 Philistines. Oh, don't forget your ox goat. Right? 600? Did you see the text? How many people did he strike down? 600. Do big things for God. The text says, who struck down 600 Philistines with an ox goat, and he too saved Israel. 600. Did you hear me? 600 Philistines, one guy. 600, one guy. This guy had to be Bruce Lee, Bruce Willis, John Wayne, Braveheart, Luke Skywalker, and how many others, and wrap them all together, one guy. And he defeated 600 Philistines. You remember the Philistines? Goliath was a Philistine. These guys were experts at war. And one guy, was it easy? Wasn't easy. Listen, folks, Shamgar faced each one of them. And there was blood, and there was sweat, and there was grunting and groaning. There was anxiety, and there was fear, and there was anxiousness. He faced each one of them. And there was wounds, and there was scars. And every single time he faced each one of the 600, Shamgar put his life on the line for God. He risks just because God said. Do you get that? And he defeated 600. How could he do such an incredible thing? The text tells us back in Judges 2, it says, whenever the Lord raises up a judge for them, he was with the judge. and saved them out of the hands of their enemies as long as the judge lived. How big was Shamgar's task? Not only did he defeat 600, the text says he saved the nation. Big? See, when God comes into your life and asks you to do whatever it is he's already given you the provision to do, you got to make sure you do it big. When you look at your marriage and you invite God and you say, I'm going to start right where I am and I'm going to let God take over my marriage, don't make your goal to have a regular, ordinary marriage. Have an incredible marriage. Have an extraordinary marriage. When you look at your kids and you start today and you say, I am going to let God take over my kids. I'm going to let God rule how I deal with my kids, my relationship with my kids. Don't settle with just having your kids grow up and be nice people. Look at your kids and see what they can do to accomplish incredible things for God. When you look at your work, when you look at your relationships, whatever it is you look at, when you start and you let God take control, don't settle. Expect God to do extraordinary things because you have an extraordinary God. You have an extraordinary God who says, I choose to be with you. Who are we talking about? We're talking about the Alpha and the Omega. We're talking about the beginning and the end. We're talking about the God who formed a universe with one spoken word. We're talking about the God who never made one mountain that he couldn't move. We're talking about the God who could make the earth shake with the drop of his son's one piece of blood. We're talking about the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. We're talking about God. And he chooses. He chooses to be with you, just like he was with Shamgar. What made Shamgar accomplish this? He started where he was. He took what God gave him. He put his life on the line 600 times, and he simply trusted God more. He trusted he was doing this for God. And the text said God was with him, and he was with every judge. Now, be careful. You know what makes this whole thing work? Every one of those judges put their life in God's hands. And that's where it starts. See, I don't know where you are today. I don't know where your faith is or where your faith isn't. I don't know if Jesus Christ is Lord of your life or not, but I'll tell you this. That's where it starts. It starts when you let Jesus Christ overwhelm you with his grace. When you understand how much he loves you and you start today and say, I'm going to give my life to Jesus Christ and I'm going to live for him. I'm going to live for him. And when you do that, he chooses to move into your life just like he did the judges. You need proof? Look at the text, John 14. If you love me, keep my commandments, and I will ask the Father, and he will give you another advocate to help you, and be where? Be with you. How long? Forever. And the Spirit of truth is his name, and you'll know him, for he lives where? With you, and will be in you. Do you see that? I will not leave you as orphans. I will come to you. On that day, you will realize that I am in my Father and you are in me and I am in who? Sounds like a judge. Doesn't it? Sounds like a judge. That's what God does. God is saying, I am not going to settle today for just Deborah and Barak and Gideon and Samson. And I choose a judge through Jesus Christ. And he's sitting and she's sitting in your chair. When you give your life to Jesus Christ, when you receive his grace and his love and his goodness and his forgiveness, he moves in and he says, it's time to stand and start right with your, where you are and let your life become incredible. Incredible for God. Incredible for God. And together, we will defeat the Philistines of fear in your life. Together, we will defeat those things that try to put you on the back roads of life. Together, we will defeat those things in our culture that try to drive you away from the truth. Together, we will defeat those things, and we'll take back our schools, and we'll take back our towns, and we'll take back your kids, and we'll take back your marriage, and we'll take everything in your life that is away from God and put it back into God's favor. Because you are my judge. Remember the title of this series? You be the judge. Is there a judge in the house? Amen? There's a judge in the house. And if you've given your life to Jesus Christ, he's sitting, she's sitting right in your chair. Let's pray while the band comes up.